Welcome to New Mexico in Focus, the podcast for Monday, November 6th, 2023. I'm Lou DeVizio. Let's get right into the headlines for the week. Santa Fe voters are considering a new tax to support affordable housing projects in the city. If passed, the so-called mansion tax would place a 3% excise tax on the purchase of new homes valued at $1 million or more. It would apply only to each dollar of the home sale cost over a million. The revenue would go directly into the city's Affordable Housing Trust Fund. Santa Fe Mayor Alan Weber supports the tax, telling the Albuquerque Journal that skyrocketing housing costs are endangering the city's diverse community. Local businesses, trade unions, school board members, former mayors, and Democratic U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich are supporting the proposal as well. However, the Santa Fe Association of Realtors says the proposed tax oversteps the city's authority under state law. The group has filed a preemptive lawsuit to block it, expressing concerns that it may discourage potential homebuyers and harm the local economy. Santa Fe City Councilors approved the measure for the November ballot by an 8-to-1 vote in August, the goal, in their mind, being to tighten the housing disparity in a city with a median home price hovering around $650,000, according to most estimates. If you'd like to learn more about the proposal, you can watch my interview explaining the context of Santa Fe's housing market and the larger implications of a mansion tax in Santa Fe. That's with HomeWise CEO Mike Lofton, and it's available on the New Mexico in Focus YouTube page right now. Also, coming up this Friday on the show, executive producer Jeff Proctor sits down with the publisher of the Santa Fe Reporter to talk about the decision from voters on this proposal and decisions in several other council races, too. That's Friday night at 7 on NMPBS. A female Mexican gray wolf, part of an endangered subspecies in North America, has moved beyond established boundaries in northern New Mexico for the second time in the last year. Federal and state wildlife managers have confirmed the wolf, identified by government officials as F2754, traveled north of Interstate 40, beyond a recovery zone, and was tracked to a mountainous area west of Jemez Springs. This is the second time the wolf, also named Asha by a middle schooler who won a contest, has traveled north, having previously reached the Taos foothills last winter before being captured and later released in Arizona. Authorities are closely monitoring her movements, but they haven't decided if and when they'll scoop her up and relocate her again. There are ongoing legal challenges over regulations that require removing Mexican wolves north of I-40, with environmental groups arguing these rules ignore the science of the situation. A representative from the environmental group Defenders of Wildlife told NPR the female wolf is in search of a mate and that she might find one in Colorado. A recent U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service survey shows a growing wolf population in the southwestern U.S., with more breeding pairs and pups showing positive trends in the wolf's recovery efforts. For more information on F2754, I highly recommend that you watch some of Our Land senior producer Laura Paskus' coverage for New Mexico in Focus over the last year or so, and read Laura's excellent reported essay for the January 25th cover of the Santa Fe Reporter newspaper. U.S. Representative Teresa Leger Fernandez is pushing the U.S. Forest Service to buy infrared drones and use them to monitor all prescribed burns in New Mexico. Infrared drones can detect heat and pinpoint a fire's location even when visibility's poor. Despite a prior commitment, Forest Service staff now say there aren't enough drones to cover every prescribed burn in the state, according to reporting from the Albuquerque Journal. Leger Fernandez says that failing to do so would undermine the Forest Service's credibility. In 2022, escaped prescribed fires burned hundreds of thousands of acres, including starting the largest wildfire in state history, the Hermit's Peak Calf Canyon Fire. In our first podcast segment this week, we zoom in on Mayor Tim Keller's idea to take oversight of Albuquerque's citizen police review systems away from City Council and hand one chunk to the city's Inspector General and the rest to himself. The mayor cites staffing woes, a lack of training for police oversight board members, and other problems to justify his proposal, and he believes the move would spell the long-awaited end to a decade-long federal consent decree that mandated sweeping reforms at the state's largest law enforcement agency, that's APD. But outgoing council president Pat Davis says the mayor's idea is misguided and would kill what's left of public trust in truly independent oversight of APD. Davis sat for an interview with executive producer Jeff Proctor to explain why he thinks City Council should remain in charge. Now, just for some quick clarification on this interview, when Councilor Davis uses the term CASA, that's an acronym for Court-Approved Settlement Agreement, legalese for the consent decree. Here's Jeff.
Pat Davis, welcome back to New Mexico in Focus.
Thanks, Jeff.
We'll get to Mayor Keller's proposal to remove the Civilian Police Oversight Agency and the Civilian Police Oversight Advisory Board from under the City Council in a moment. Those are some seriously clunky proper nouns.
Yeah.
I would like to begin, however, by asking sort of a bigger question. Why is citizen police oversight important, especially for a department like APD?
Well, remember that at the end of the day, sort of that policing function is kind of the most important and maybe the biggest extension of the government's power over people, right? We have the ability to take away a person's life if we determine, that police officer determines at that moment, that they've committed something that is danger to other people, right? That there's no second chance on that decision. And quite frankly, departments like APDs have had a really bad history for a really long time of ignoring the constitutional requirements to be sure that we're getting ahead of that, we're intervening, we're thinking about use of force in a way that makes it the last resort, not the first. And so it's no history. APD has not done this well, not under this mayor, not under the last three or four mayors, not under a number of police union members. Its culture over the last few decades, since the 80s at least, has drawn serious questions from the community and eroded our public trust. And so the way you get that back is to give civilians the oversight of the agency to be sure that civilians are receiving the type of police service that they deserve, want, and is constitutional. We haven't done that for about 40 years, and we're trying to fix that.
So empowering people who live here to have a say in the way they're policed is sort of what I'm hearing you say. And obviously that's an incredibly important function. Here in Albuquerque, the citizen police oversight system is frankly a hot mess. The mayor sent you a letter last week, and I would like to go through some of the undisputed facts, the parade of horribles, if you will, that are laid out. Let's start with this. Two of five seats on that board are currently filled. The board hasn't even met since January, let alone discussed any sort of an officer misconduct case, which is its function. The oversight agency doesn't have a permanent leader, and the city council has yet to hire the contractor who is responsible for hiring that permanent leader. Right. Councilor Davis, how can any of that, let alone all of that, be true in a city where the police shoot more people than almost anywhere else in the country?
Well, this gets back to our history of police oversight, civilian police oversight in the city. This is, by the way you count it, the third or fourth time the city council and the mayor have tried to come up with a structure that works. As the president of the city council, I take responsibility for saying that I agree with the big principle that the city council has not been fast enough to move those new pieces along. But we have to remember that the first CPOA, the one that was under the initial version of this after the CASA was implemented, after the Police Oversight Commission, the old version, it really didn't work, right? After 3 or 4 years, there was a rework that Councilor Winter and I worked on to really try to narrow the scope, give them more insight into APD big picture policy and less focus on individual investigations. That got to be ungovernable, and we went through four directors basically in a year. And so the city council undertook a year-long process to review that whole thing. We looked at other cities on the recommendation of DOJ, places that worked, places that didn't, and we restructured that last January. So that new CPOA, the Oversight Advisory Board legislation, passed. The mayor didn't act on it, and so it went into effect in February. That gave us this past February, and we said it's going to take us a year to do this the right way. And so our staff has been working with APD and DOJ and other communities who've done this a little further ahead of us to look at what that looks like. The new advisory board is not designed to do individual investigations, because the idea is individual citizens probably don't have the expertise individually to do that investigation. And so we gave them professional investigators who have experience, training, and this group will provide oversight of those investigators, kind of like the Internal Affairs Department of the Police Department that sits outside of it, just like the DOJ had done.
So this all lives under the city council, at least in the current iteration. Is this just one of those "this takes time" things, or have there been individual sort of points of failure or challenges that have come up in the process of trying to get this right?
There is a consistent challenge that we continue to come by. We don't have enough people who have applied to do on this board, and part of that is the history. What we know is that the last iteration of the Police Oversight Board, when they were overseeing investigations and policy and all those things, some of those volunteer members were working 40 hours a week as volunteers just to go to all the meetings and just to read all the policies and keep up with everything, and it was just too much. And so we restructured that, but we said it's going to take a year. And here's what I told the mayor, and here's what we wrote back to the mayor last week. We are on track to do that. We actually appointed three members to that board. We were on track to get to a quorum. One of them resigned after determining that they were not going to be able to perform that duty. We've interviewed 11 other candidates have been interviewed and qualified. They're scheduled
for the board.
For the board itself, they're scheduled to be introduced at the city council meeting on the 20th, which allows us to act on them at the first meeting in December. So we're on track to have a quorum of that board ready to go by the end of the year, as promised. We have a RFP out for that contract monitor to help us do that. We determined that we needed to know who the board members were going to be and be sure they understood the rules before we had a monitor to sit there and wait. We didn't have anything for them to do until we have a board. So we're on track to appoint that person in December and then hire a director. But that doesn't mean stuff's not happening. We have an acting director. We have investigators. They have been producing reports and data. And so we're seeing those and they're available. But we're at the end of that year of rebuilding. We want to hand the new city council next year a fully functioning board under this new premise and model so that they can be in the oversight role and not in the rebuilding role that I've been in for the last 8 years.
Okay, you alluded a moment ago to the history of attempts at citizen police oversight in the city of Albuquerque. Ostensibly that began back in the mid 90s. It's never worked. I don't think there's any objective measure that would say we've ever had a system in place that Albuquerque trusted. I think it's worth noting that the framework for the current system was sort of birthed in 2014, and that was sort of alongside the Justice Department's findings of use of excessive force and failed leadership at APD and City Hall. You did sort of grab a piece out of my hippocampus called the Police Oversight Commission. I want to talk a little bit about how that worked. So yeah. That was the old system prior to 2014, the POC. Right. The independent review officer investigated the excessive force cases and officer misconduct cases under that scheme. All of that lived under the administration.
That's right.
One of those investigators, a guy named Jay Rowland, produced an incredibly scathing report about problems in the APD evidence room. Not long after that thing published, Jay was never heard from again. So the task force that created the new system, one thing that was really important to them, and I wrote a lot about this at the time, was making sure that the system was removed from under the administration. They placed it under the council very intentionally. Did they get that part right?
100%. The one thing we know is that in our history in the past, as police oversight has been, as you mentioned, and as you wrote about decades ago, that has been under the administration. It's given them the ability. And here's what really didn't work. When we go back and look at that old Walker Luna report, right? This is the city council that was Alan Armijo and Sam Bregman did their own mini study about what to do that produced the Police Oversight Commission and then became the CPOA. What they found was that independent review officer, when they report to the mayor, for example, suddenly the mayor who negotiates union contracts negotiated away the ability of the independent review officer to look at some of the more serious allegations or to give the public a long form view of officer misconduct. And so they had to look at Officer Jeff's single incident and not the seven things in a row that had led up to that, that had also been found to be unconstitutional or outside of policy.
No pattern inquiries.
Yeah, that's a great term for that, right? And so what really happened was once the mayor both has control over the police department and the oversight, and this is not the current mayor, it's any mayor, you run into the problem that you mentioned, which is, what if they decide I'm not going to allow you to investigate that? Or worse, what if I contractually remove your authority to do that with the police union in negotiations, both of which happened in the former model? Every city that's gotten this right or gotten this better than us ensures that they're wholly independent. And that's part of the argument I think the mayor's trying to make about moving them to the inspector general, at least in the city that is a quasi-independent agency with clearly not always a little adversarial with the mayor and the city council. And so if you want a bulldog agency to sort of take on this role, like the inspector general's not a bad one, but there are some flaws there too. But absolutely, independence is important. And don't forget, it ultimately is the city council's role to hold the administration accountable. That's why we have two branches of government. And so that's part of their role for oversight, is to be sure. If we need an independent group of community people with certain expertise to help us with that, we should implement that. And that's really how we should look at this. It is ultimately the city council responsible, but they're asking for experts to help.
Gotcha. And so that people don't forget that city government has gotten so large now. You mentioned holding the administration accountable. APD is the administration. The administration is APD. I just want to make sure that that gets said, because sometimes people view that as a separate set of entities.
Well,
right?
And people come to city council meetings asking us to take, you know, what, fire this police officer because of what I read in the Albuquerque Journal or a newspaper or on TV. Remember that city councilors aren't allowed to get involved in personnel decisions. In many cases, we're not even allowed to know what type of discipline was imposed on a city employee in a specific case, other than employees who committed this infraction have had these discipline imposed. And so it really is important that somebody with oversight authority be able to look, as you mentioned, in that long form view, but also in a big picture state. How many people did we shoot last year? What were the circumstances for that? I don't think, as a former police officer myself, and there are a couple of us on the city council, I don't think that we have the expertise to look at all of those cases and do that. But we need somebody who does, and that should inform the city council.
Gotcha. So the mayor wants to take the CPOA piece and place that under the inspector general, as you just mentioned. He wants to take vetting responsibility for board members on the civilian board and essentially handle that himself. Can he just do that with the stroke of a pen?
Oh, good for the city that he can't just do that. But I think what he's doing is starting a conversation, and here's where I think it makes sense. Remember that we're 95% compliant with where we started with DOJ, according to their own monitors, meaning we've gotten 95% of the policy right, and we're at about 70-80%, depending on the section, in terms of implementing it, meaning that we're doing it the right way, we're recognizing our failures and correcting them. It doesn't mean we have to be 100%. It means we have to correct the problems, and
we have a system in place to self-monitor. Right?
It's a feedback loop, right? When something goes wrong, we fix it and we continue to improve. That's good news. The independent oversight has been a problem in every city that has had these issues, in part because citizens don't all agree on what it means to have a police department that's servicing them in the way they want to see. But ultimately, having the mayor make the decision about who gets to decide whether that's right or wrong, not just to this mayor, but any, is problematic. And we've seen that in other places. We look at what happened with the Oñate statue and the mayor's fight with the museum board, whether their recommendation to remove or return the statue, for example, aligned with their agenda, and they changed out some members of that board at that time. These are some big community conversations, but to your point, we have a history. When mayors get to decide who gets to be in charge of oversight and who gets to be in charge of taking action and discipline, those things eventually sort of meld into one and really can just ignore big problems. And that's how we got here.
So you mentioned the DOJ consent decree. The mayor has been very, very clear that he would like to end federal oversight of our police department as quickly as possible.
Yes.
He is running for a third term next year. Being able to end the consent decree would obviously look very nice in a campaign ad. From reading the letter that he sent to the council, he's framing this as a way to end the consent decree. Do you view this as political? Have you spoken to the mayor? What do you see as his motivation here?
The mayor and I talk every couple of weeks on purpose in person, and we talked about this before he sent his letter, and I shared it with other councilors, but I think it's sort of dead on arrival for the idea that we would give this to the inspector general. I'll be done with my term in another couple of weeks. And so it'll ultimately be up to the next council if the mayor can wrangle those votes. But what I know is that the administration and the community, including all the stakeholders in the APD forward process, worked with us for a year to come up with this new process, to see how this is going to work, to have professional trained investigators, to have an independent monitor in the city council, and to have an advisory board of citizens who can look at the big picture and tell us what's working and what's not. Remember, when this CASA's gone, and I think we should celebrate the fact that we've got, not that they're gone, like I don't like the frame that we're getting really from APOA that says our job is to get them gone. No, our job is to have a community, a constitutional policing agency that doesn't violate people's rights. Mm-hmm. And so when we can prove we do that, we deserve to not have mom and dad looking over our shoulder. But we have to put some of these reform pieces in legislation so that when counselors like me or others are gone, we don't lose that institutional knowledge. That's what this is about. What concerns us is putting the CPOA under the Inspector General or anywhere else where the agenda could get lost. At the very least, we have a group of citizens who can come to the city council meeting and say, we work for you, they're not giving us what we need your attention. When those folks don't report to, when they report to this APD and they all report to the same people, there's nobody to raise that. There's no whistleblower anymore. And that's what got APD in trouble in the first place.
Gotcha. So you mentioned that you think this is dead on arrival with this particular council.
This provision.
This provision, right? So what I want to ask, obviously you're leaving the council, as you just mentioned, in a few weeks. So I'm not going to ask you to prognosticate about what the next council might do, but what is your hope leaving the council for what Burkeños should expect from citizen police oversight going forward? You got about a minute.
Really quickly, what we know now is that it was asking too much to ask individual citizens to volunteer 40 or 50 hours a week to look at individual cases of police misconduct, and their perceptions of that were vastly different, and often they were not, didn't have the experience to apply a constitutional lens that DOJ would apply to the officer were they prosecuted, for example. And so what we've asked is that new board is going to give us big picture stuff. They're going to monitor the provisions of the CASA that we put in law, so when CASA's not here, we still have something to hold them to. They're going to tell us how many officers we have working, how many of them committed use of force, used force, and how many of those were constitutional, and how the department is doing. This is the oversight agency. From a professional level, these are the independent investigators are going to be the cops watching the cops, right? They're experienced law enforcement folks applying this standard to be sure that APD systems work. It's the EFIT system. It's the external force review system that DOJ applied to APD when they tried to do their own internal affairs and failed. We're codifying those processes to be sure they're there beyond any of us, and we're going to have that. So what people should expect is more data about how APD reacts and how many uses of force they use on a regular basis, because we have an outside agency and we're not relying on APD to do their own reporting. And they're going to see more investigations and more transparency when APD doesn't close that feedback loop. I think you're going to see fewer and fewer lists of just officer did a bad thing and APD did the right thing. That's not something that generally the public is going to get involved in because that's working. But what you should see is the city council is going to be out of the rebuilding mode and into the compliance mode, and somebody's got to do that. And so keeping that adversarial relationship between the mayor and the council, if everything's working great, they should be focused on other things. But when something falls apart again, it's going to be incumbent on the new city council to raise that flag and use their oversight authority. And I'll be the first to say that the city council hasn't done a good enough job in oversight in other areas over the last few years, particularly on some of the big ticket stuff, and they're going to have to be held accountable to do it now.
That was a long minute. Pat Davis, thank you for coming back on the show.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks to Jeff and to Councilor Davis. A spokesperson for Mayor Keller responded to our questions, saying the mayor's letter was merely a suggestion to, quote, prod councilors. Here's part of that statement. Quote, APD is almost done with the consent decree, and one of the only items left is the council's CPOA work. So, we all just need to get off the dime and see reform through for our community, end quote. You can read the mayor's entire response and some deeper reporting from Jeff on the issue of citizen police oversight in Albuquerque linked in the description of this podcast episode and in New Mexico in Focus's Friday newsletter. Now, we turn to former New Mexico Interstate Stream Commission Director Norman Gaum, who's back on the show to talk about water planning in the state. Over the past decade, Gaum has worked from outside government urging lawmakers to fund New Mexico's water agencies and to protect the state's waters. These days, he's president of New Mexico Water Advocates, and he talks with Our Land senior producer Laura Paskus about the 2023 Water Security Planning Act, some of the serious problems around the state, and the need for community-driven solutions.
Norm Gaum, welcome back to New Mexico in Focus.
I'm glad to be here, Laura. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So a few months ago, we had Interstate Stream Commission Director Hannah Risley White on the show, and we talked a bit about water planning in New Mexico. I wanted to ask you, how do you feel water planning in New Mexico is going?
Well, first of all, let me say that I think the legislation that passed in 2023, and it passed without a single no vote, mm-hmm. not in committee, not on either floor, signed by the governor. It was a state engineer bill, so the agencies support it. it has such potential for New Mexico, but it's complex. And the Interstate Stream Commission and the State Engineer Office are just buried in work. Mm-hmm. They don't have the capacity that we really need them to have, and that's because the legislature has, and the governors, past governors, have actually cut their staff. You know, in this age where we need, we're experiencing water scarcity, we need planning. So the good news is we have a great new law that could be a tipping point, a pivot point, you know, from which progress accelerates. The realities are that it's going to be slow getting off the ground because of capacity limitations, both at the state level and in the regions that have to do the planning.
Yeah, so despite an enormous budget surplus that everybody likes to talk about, are we funding water planning and water agencies?
No, the answer is absolutely not.
I've heard you talk about ongoing water governance issues that require immediate attention or action. What are some of those?
Well, the Ogallala Aquifer, the communities, Clovis, Portales, Texaco. I understand Texaco and Portales literally ran out of water this summer. Their wells Wow. ran dry. They're getting trickles out of their showers. We've known about that problem for decades in this state, and we have let the status quo go until now. We literally have more wells being drilled. It's a race to the very bottom of the aquifer. And I'm talking about communities that will have no drinking water if we don't change what we're doing now. In the Middle Rio Grande, mm-hmm. we have big problems, but they're manageable. But as long as we're not attempting to manage them holistically, they're not going to be managed because no one entity has the formula to fix things. Mm-hmm. International scholars who met at UNM in June concluded that water is a community problem. Research into problems and solutions don't reach the people. They don't reach the legislature. A community problem like water can only be solved can only be addressed through community-driven solutions. That's what planning is all about. It's coming up with community-driven solutions, and that's what our new law provides for. Mm-hmm. And the new solutions can't depend just on the state or just on the water authority or the conservancy district, because all of those institutions in the Middle Valley have their own missions, and their missions are to take care of their people, right. not to take care of the water system and the water supply. And so the pieces don't add up to a whole. What the Act says is we have to come together, we have to collaborate, and we have to find solutions to our problems. And to me, it doesn't do any good to talk about the specific problems right now, because that's just going to turn people off. What we have to do is what the Water Security Planning Act tells us to do, which is to self-organize a collaborative effort where we can work together and find agreed solutions to our problems. And it's not going to be easy. We've got to get started.
There are these problems statewide and issues statewide, but just looking at the Middle Rio Grande Valley, I'm curious what you think. Are we living within our water budget? Are we living within our water budget?
The simple answer is no. The trend has been really negative, just down, down, down for the last decade. Basically, a lot of our water went away, but our uses remain the same. What we did is we transferred from the river, which we were beginning to depend on for drinking water in Albuquerque, back to groundwater. And guess what? The groundwater, remember, it was rising? It started to fall again. But the good news is that we have the ingredients for solution. We in the Middle Valley have over half of the state's people. We have half the state's economy, the diversified economy. We have a thin slice of water to support all of that. We have to figure out how to manage that thin slice by agreement so that it meets our needs. It may not meet all of our wants, but there's enough water to meet our needs.
Mm-hmm. So looking back, you were the Interstate Stream Commission director from 1997 to 2002. Looking back now, what do you wish that maybe you had done differently then?
You know, I have close colleagues that I depend a lot on that counsel me that my constant wishing the past should have been different is really not productive. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't change things. What we have to focus on the future. What do I wish I had done differently? Well, when I was appointed Interstate Stream Commission director, the crisis of the moment in water was compliance with the Pecos River Compact.
Right.
And through a collaborative process involving the stakeholders, we found an agreed solution. We negotiated it. Everybody agreed. It was passed into law by the legislature in the very next session of the legislature. And you know what? Compact compliance on the Pecos has not been a problem since. Mm-hmm. And it was a crisis every year before that. You know, going back to 1987 when we were served with a decree to never again owe water to Texas. I said at the time that I'm happy to work on this crisis, but the lower Rio Grande is more important and the middle Rio Grande is most important at all. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't have the bandwidth or time, or my agency didn't have the resources to deal with those issues, the Interstate Stream Commission. They have more resources now, but not enough. So I wish, if anything, what we had done was to set the stage for concentrated attention on the lower Rio Grande and the middle Rio Grande. We prepared a plan. Some of that got into the plan, but guess what? The plans were never funded to be implemented. Mm-hmm. Now, the Pecos River plan, that was a crisis. It was fully funded by the state. It was implemented. It was a success.
Right.
We need to replicate that. In the lower Rio Grande, we most especially need to replicate it here in the middle Rio Grande.
So one of the things that I think about sometimes is people who work in water in New Mexico or probably anywhere, whether they're in federal or state agencies, like they genuinely care about water. They're not in it for any other reason except that they care about these issues. But I also feel like a lot of people who work in water in New Mexico know that our problems are far bigger than we publicly acknowledge. And certainly that legislators acknowledge. I'm curious what you might urge these types of employees to consider or to think about in their daily work and in their work for the state?
That's an excellent question, Laura. When I arrived at the ISC, I was told that we shouldn't be too frank about problems when we're talking about problems because that would be an admission that would be used against us. So the theory was to even talk about a problem was an admission. Right now, there are people in the Office of the State Engineer that are in charge of these big data sets. They can't help what the people who came before them did, but those data sets are in lousy condition and they need to be cleaned up. People need to say that. One of the keys on the Pecos River to our solution was speaking what we called then and what I call now the plain truths. You know, the plain truths in Albuquerque in the 1990s were the aquifer's not working the way we think it should, what's going on, and then later, we can't pump the groundwater as our only means of service supply because the river water is not making into it. That's a plain truth. The plain truth in the Middle Rio Grande is we're using more water than we are entitled to. The plain truth in the Middle Rio Grande is that nobody is protecting the volume of water that remains in the aquifer. The aquifer is not a protected water supply source in the state, except through permits and things that only peripherally get to the problem, and those permits are never revisited. Mm-hmm. You know, so we have to change our ways dramatically. And the only way we do that is to talk about the problems. Admission or not, we can't solve a problem unless we can name it. Mm-hmm. Name the problems, talk about them, seek solutions.
Right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. On our website, we'll have resources and information on how people can become involved in water planning. So thank you.
Laura, you do a real public service in New Mexico. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks to Norman Gaum and Laura, as always, and thank you for listening to the podcast this week. Be sure to follow our pages on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube throughout the week. You can give us feedback or just stay up to date as we post previews and news items leading up to our show on Friday night. Thanks again, everyone. I'm Senior Producer Lou DeVizio for Monday, November 6th, 2023. This is New Mexico in Focus, the podcast. Have a great week, everyone.